Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti. I'm back, but I'm back secure in the knowledge that I left you in the very capable hands of Alison Rudd. Was the show good last week?
Very good.
It was exceptional, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
Thank you, Alison, for filling in. With me today, I'm joined here in the studio, and it's great because we have three guests in the studio. It's James Scowcroft, Stuart Robson, and it's funny because we have Stuart on in a week where I hope not to mention that team in North London that used to be in Woolwich. I don't hope not to mention them at all, not even once. And Julian Lawrence. We've got a lot to discuss, but we're going to start at Turf Moor. Now, for those who don't know, Turf Moor is the home of Burnley, who were once a massive club. Then they became a smaller club, and now they're back in the Premier League. Now, actually, the club you're probably wondering about are Lincoln, the team that played them. And we saw history. And I know we all get cynical about the FA Cup and the magic of the cup, and it's trite. But Stuart, this is historic. Lincoln are non-league. I mean, they haven't been non-league for long. I believe, was it 3 years ago? Or anybody actually know for sure? Because I have no idea. Five years ago.
Five years.
Time flies and you're having a good time. They were relegated. So they are historically, though, they are a league club historically. Mm-hmm. But this is pretty amazing, no?
Well, when you see over the years, and hundreds of years, when non-league teams have beaten a Premier League side or a top league side, it's been in history and you keep repeating that they show the same clips. Lincoln deserve massive credit for what they've done because they've got a couple of young managers, or a manager and his assistant who are...
His brother.
PE teachers at a local school from where I'm from Southend. They've done a wonderful job. They've got them well organised. They're playing with great spirit. They know how to stop the opposition playing and they know how to cause them problems. And they do it in a fairly old-fashioned way. But you can't take anything away from what they've done. The crowd that turned up to watch them as well, the Lincoln supporters, it made for a wonderful atmosphere.
But there is one specific incident in the game I think it's worth going over. It's this business with Joey Barton. Initially, you had the thing where, was it Matt Reed, the striker? He seems to be swinging his arm. And what did you make of it?
I thought it was an absolute joke. I mean, I like Joey Barton. I think he's a good guy. I know him quite well. And I was very surprised. I was surprised by the antics of diving. He basically himself bumped into the arm of Matt Reed to pretend that Matt Reed elbowed him. Something similar, if you haven't seen the footage.
Having already stood on his foot.
Yes, I've stamped on him.
Well, I stamped on him.
I tried to.
Matt Reed is a very big man. We're kind of exaggerating if we call that a stamp, what Joey Barton did.
Yeah, no, right. Matt Reed seems to say to the ref that Joey Barton stood on his feet or something like that. But after that, it's really low. For a professional player like him, there's no need to do that. I mean, maybe there was a lot of frustration from Burnley players, and I get that, because you don't want to, it's a humiliation to be knocked out at home by a conference team. And I get that.
And also, that was a strong team that Sean Dyche put out.
Yeah, it was a really strong team.
They've got nothing to lose in the league, so obviously they were going for it.
Yeah, and you're obviously very close to, you know, reaching the semi-finals and Wembley and this and that, but you can't do things like that. I'm sorry, it's just not acceptable.
Scully, I want to ask you, because you're perhaps more than Stuart, we're more of the sort of penalty box warrior type thing, and it struck me that, you know, if you've got long arms like you do, the potential for sort of turning and accidentally whacking somebody is there. The potential for stepping on somebody's foot, saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, did I step on your foot?" Sometimes I'm surprised that it doesn't happen more.
I think it does lower down. You just don't see it in the Premier League. It doesn't happen because you cannot get away with it. Everything is filmed, watched 15,000 times over, so you just can't get away. I think in the lower leagues it does. There is a little bit of gamesmanship. I think it's just frustration from Joey Barton. And I think if you're Lincoln, that's exactly the kind of game you want, a scrappy kind of, you know, stop-start game. So I think Joey's should have been a little bit more experienced, really. But it does happen, and when I played in the lower leagues, it happened a lot to me, and I have to say I was guilty once or twice as well.
Really? Come on, tell us the story. Come on, Uncle James.
So you react when you shouldn't be reacting.
I'll tell you a story, and it's not a good story, actually. And it was actually against, when I played non-league football, I played against Concord Rovers, and these two guys were the managers of the opposition's team, and I played against a lad from Essex.
This is an audio thing. You can't just point to a picture and say,
okay, sorry,
these two guys.
The Cowling brothers, who I've got a lot of respect for.
So you played against a team managed by these two Lincoln guys.
It would have been 6 years ago now, 5 years.
James played 300 odd games in the Premier League and so on. This is at the end of your career. You decide to keep playing because you love the game, and you start playing non-league football, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was good, and I really enjoyed it, and I'd recommend it to any player coming down, and it was a good challenge. It keeps you fit, and I really enjoyed it. And we played, it's in the Ryman Premier, and we were in the playoffs, which is a similar situation to the Championship, but they were in the playoffs as well. And we played this team, I can remember it quite well. And it was April, the pitch was bone hard, awful, and had this lad marking me, who was a local Essex lad, white boots, 15 stone, verbally mouthed off the whole game, blah, blah, blah. And I caught him with an arm, and I didn't quite mean to do it, but I didn't stop myself doing it as well. And then these two guys nearly ran on the pitch and were going to strangle me. And I had a little conversation.
But they seemed like such nice, middle-class, harmless brothers.
They're from South End. They can't be middle class.
Yeah, they're not middle class, that's for sure.
The Cowley brothers came after you?
They didn't come after me. They said I was a bit of a disgrace, which I just said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Now, I was curious, when this guy was winding you up, was it because obviously when you have a guy who was a big Premier League player going down to that level, was he referencing that? Was he saying like, oh, you're finished, Scowcroft or stuff? Or what kind of stuff was he saying? Or was it just kind of generic abuse?
Just everything. Who are you? Blah, blah, blah.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Like, I have my own Wikipedia page. Who the hell are you?
I'm not into all of that. I don't get involved in all that. But it was a little bit. I just remember catching this lad. It was a 50-50, and I got my body in, and I got my arm out to come across. And I sort of half knew what I was doing, and he just went into it. He was obviously wasn't experienced, and he put his head in. He didn't put his arm up, and I caught him. And if it had been on the Premier League, it had been shown 50 times over, and obviously, it's a disgrace. And I only got a yellow card for it. And the lad had this black eye afterwards. And these two lads come up to me and say, look, sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
And did you apologise to the guy after the game?
He was fine. He didn't even
notice he had a black eye.
Well, I think he did. But
real rocket scientist at that level.
The beauty of it at that level is that for those conference players to play against Premier League stars or players, whatever, it's incredible. So the extra motivation would be that, a bit like playing against James Scowcroft in the Ryman Premier League. What's the next time are you going to play against the next Premier League player? Never. So you get pumped up, I assume.
You do. And what was interesting, the egos were bigger at that level than what they are at the top end of the game.
Really?
Yeah, which I found fascinating week in. On the sideline, the dribble used to hear from coaches and managers shout on the sideline, and the players and what they the opinion they thought they had of themselves was quite interesting.
Going back to Lincoln, and Julian, we were talking before, you're fascinated, as am I, by this Matt Reed, this sort of giant of a man with just rather...
By the way, that was me playing as well. If you look at that size, that was I'd probably put on a stone and a half.
I love Matt Reed. I have to say, Matt Reed, I know you're listening to us. I absolutely love you. Just, I love your hair. Please never shave it. Gav and I absolutely love your hair.
It is a cambiasso, isn't it?
It is a cambiasso. It is. You just don't do anything to your hair. I love the way you play. I just love that you're... beer belly. I love that you win every ball in the air, everywhere, anywhere on the pitch. You just love it. I even looked him up, on the internet. I saw that he scored against Lincoln with Mansfield before joining Lincoln. And he had quite a good career in a way.
Julian, what I would say, I saw the game on Saturday and I thought it was a real handful. We're reading this in the newspaper here. Burnley really struggled. And you're talking about good players as well.
Yeah.
But Burnley didn't. They've made a few changes. But someone like Michael Keane.
It was Keane and Tarkowski.
Yeah,
right?
They struggled to get hold of him. This is happening. It's a little bit of a pattern. It happened in the Millwall Leicester game. A lot of these players do not come against this style of player
anymore in
the Premier League. They don't know how to deal with it. All of a sudden, you've got this 16-stone guy backing into you. You can't get round him. You end up fouling him.
It's not just the physique and everything. please check out the goal he scored against Barrow this season with Lincoln. An overhead, it's amazing.
This is Barrow we're talking about, yes?
I don't care. A goal is a goal.
No, I just want to make sure people look up the right thing on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's Barrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
B-A-R-R-O-W-B-R-O. Yeah, something like that. It's amazing. So I'm just saying that even that, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, I'm definitely in love with you, Marit.
I'm just curious, when you do play against somebody like that, would it make more sense to front him rather than to go behind him?
Well, there's two
because
ways.
Because if it goes over the top, it's not like he's going to turn and run away from you.
Yeah, there's two ways you can do it. You have to be clever as a centre-half. You have to sort of get your position early and sort of get in front of him, maybe. Then you threaten to head it, so he flicks it on and you back off and you pick up the bits and pieces. You get your midfield player to sit in front of him, so he fouls the midfield player. Quite often does that. So there's several ways you can do it. But what
I just can't
Burnley
imagine why
do,
you would ever be behind him.
They weren't like, sensible enough.
That's the worst thing you can do is get behind someone.
You don't want to be goal side.
Actually, the best way to do it is to get in front of him.
That's what I said,
you can mark someone in front and you take up that space in front.
Or you never, ever make contact with him before the ball's played forward. So if he wants to pin you, you don't ever get pinned. You go around the side of him. So you've got to run at it rather than him just backing into you and backing into you and bringing balls down on his chest.
I hope you're listening, Sutton players, because I guess they have Lincoln in the next round, right? That's right, Kasialny Mustafi. Hope you guys are listening to Stuart Robson's advice. Our podcast this week is brought to you in part by FanDuel. Now, FanDuel is one-day fantasy football. You can go to FanDuel, that's FanDuel.co.uk, to find out more. You're probably already familiar with it, but for those who aren't, you select a team of Premier League players for a single round of fixtures, or indeed Champions League players. They have that as well. So you're not locked in for the whole season. You're just locked in for one day. And for me personally, at least, that's a lot more rewarding than doing fantasy for the whole season. Or if you start out badly, you may never actually recover. The Champions League Tuesday and Wednesday game covers all the Champions League fixtures over the 2 days. £5 entry, top prize is £250, and you have to finish in the top 70 to double your money or more. You can play for free, or you can put your own money on the line for bigger payouts. For example, we've entered the Premier League fan favorite game this week. There's £2,500 to be won. There's a £500 first prize, and 120 participating teams will win cash. All this for just a £5 entry fee. What I like about this is, unlike other fantasy games, this game is powered by OptiStats. They have an algorithm that awards points, and it goes way beyond goals, assists, clean sheets. They count up passes, interceptions, tackles. In other words, it's not the kind of thing where, you know, picking a defensive midfielder does you no good whatsoever because he's not going to score. FanDuel scoring reflects a player's true performance, whatever their position. We also have an offer for you. If you sign up with the promo code The Game, then FanDuel will return your entry fee as free credit up to £10 if you don't win cash in your first contest. Go to fanduel.co.uk. That's FANDUEL.co.UK, and enter our promo code, The Game, in the promo code field to sign up, and you will bag the offer. Now, this is only open to UK residents. We had a whole bunch of upsets and near upsets, and we have a replay. Huddersfield and Manchester City. Now, this game finished in a draw. Pep obviously thinking ahead to Monaco. We'll actually be asking Julian about Monaco later on. Will this annoy Pep, or will he be like, oh, look, I gave Fabian Delph 90 minutes, so this is good?
I think he's sensible enough to realise that if you're playing against a team who are flying high in the Championship on their own ground in front of fervent supporters on a pitch that had rugby played on it only a few days ago, it's not a bad result for Manchester City. You know, over the years, it's been proved that top teams, if you go to a top side in the Championship who are playing full of confidence and put out their full side and have got a big crowd behind them, it's always a difficult tie. And you're quite happy to get a draw. No matter about the fixture congestion, you're quite happy to get a job because he made so many changes.
Yeah, I don't get to watch Championship, mostly by choice. But Wagner obviously is a bit different as a manager. People drew the parallels with Klopp. From what I saw, it's even more Klopp-esque than I imagine. I mean, those guys really, really run.
They play good football as well. They're a very, very good footballing side.
So it's not just the running and the intensity.
No. I've seen a lot of them this season. They are, one of them, Fulham are very good. Huddersfield are two of the standout football insides. They play through midfield, playing little triangles, and they would have taken Man City on at their own game. That's why I'm surprised. It's not one of these away games you're playing on a difficult pitch. They're very physical, they're very direct. They would have given Man City a game of football. They would have said, right, okay, we're going to play out from the back.
And without the best player who's on loan from City.
I mean, Gabriel Jesus injured. There's been a lot of talk about Aguero, whether he fits or not. I mean, take this opportunity to talk about it a little bit. Personally, I don't quite get why Aguero wouldn't fit, but maybe there's a technical reason I'm missing, Stuart. I mean, I've been told it's because he doesn't press enough. Certainly, that's the stock answer. But yeah. You know, it's kind of like, wait, doesn't he?
But he's one of the best strikers in the world, and he can score goals out of nothing. He's quick off the mark. He can do all the things you'd want of a centre forward. Does he press high enough? And that's the reason that Klopp won't play Sturridge. But he's more disciplined than Sturridge. And you don't have to press from one side of the field to the other. You only have to press one player and go and put a bit of pressure on him. I think it's unfortunate, and I think Pep Guardiola is just trying to make an issue with Aguero, saying he's not the kingpin of this club. There's other players that can go and score goals, other players that can do the job just as well. But I'd be very surprised if Aguero isn't your first choice week in, week out.
Yeah, the line I was actually given, Julian, was specifically that he doesn't go and press the opposing center half as intensely as Pep would like him to, and so they're vulnerable to, you know, the center back just booting a ball over the top when then like Stones freezes and Otamendi freaks out and the guy runs through and then Bravo puts it in the back of his net. But it just seems like if you want somebody who's going to go and press the center backs, it doesn't necessarily need to be your center forward, because he's closer from him. There's different things you can do. You can drop your center forward, have your winger come in. They've got Sterling, Son, they've got plenty of guys who can do that, right?
I don't know.
What's the issue here?
Would the issue be that maybe Pep doesn't think he's clever enough to understand all the quite complicated where Pep
Aguero's
wants
movement
them to...
Is it good?
I don't know.
I'm struggling with you. As a game plan, you want your players. If you've got a defensive game plan and that's pressing the ball, you want your centre forward to go and press it. But he doesn't have to change. It's not very complicated. You can almost say to him, their left side centre back, as soon as the goalkeeper gets the ball and he throws it out there, make sure you go on this angle and force it out to the fullback or whatever your game plan is.
So we're not buying this then. Is that what we're saying?
I think if you listen to Frank Lampard, did an interview on TV about Aguero.
Frank Lampard Jr.
Yeah. And dropped a little hint, probably by mistake actually, and he was saying who was the worst trainer you trained with, and he said, well, believe it or not, it was Sergio Aguero. We'd go out for training at 10:30 and he'd sort of stroll out 10 minutes later and the manager would say, oh, you know, trying to find you, and he'd shrug his shoulder, find me, and you know, everyone put up with him because he'd score a hat-trick at the weekend, and you just thought, oof, not quite sure Pep's going to put up with that. And I think that's a little insight.
I heard a similar thing, that Sergio was not very good at training. Full stop. Controls, first touches, shot, training, not really putting on.
All right, so I'm going to ask another broad question to the former coach here. Does it matter?
Yes.
Sorry, former coach. But
it does. If you're a coach and you've got game plans and you want to make sure training's serious and you want to get the best out of the players, and one player doesn't want to do it and comes out with a bad attitude at some point.
Oh, you're mixing two things. One is you guys are saying he's not good at training. The other one is he has a bad attitude. They're not
coming out
10
minutes
thing.
Late. It's a bad attitude. Surely.
But even though
when people
weekend,
turn up 10 minutes late for this program, you get very annoyed.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
So Pep could be annoyed as well if Sergio is not on time in training, for example.
For those who are fans of the NBA, one of my all-time favorite players is Allen Iverson, who used to get in trouble occasionally for not trying hard in practice and stuff. And there's a wonderful speech he gave, the practice speech, where he kind of sums up my feelings on this. Mm. If you're that much better than everybody else, and Sergio Aguero is that much better than everybody else at that club, not named Kevin, I don't understand... I don't understand what the issue is. I understand if it starts to impact the game on the weekend.
The problem is, Gab, you can't have a rule for one and another rule for the other players.
Interesting, though, you say that, because when years ago when I wrote a book with Gianluca Vialli, we went around and we spoke to everybody from Fergie to Wenger to Mourinho to Lippi to Capello. The one thing they all agreed, actually, was that this idea that everybody's equal is bunk. Some people are more important than others. And you have to have different rules for different people. You're not there to teach life values with professionals. And if there are certain people who take liberties for the good of the team, and it's actually the players who want to,
Well, Ferguson had it with Cantona, didn't he? That's great when you're at the top of the league and you've been the manager there for several seasons. But if you're a new manager that's coming in saying, we've actually underachieved as a group here, we need to change this, we need
and
to...
Also, if you've got a say we're talking about Aguero now, and you're putting on a session where it's high intensity, you want to close the ball down, and one player doesn't do it, your session is messed up completely because suddenly the intensity goes way down in the player's efforts. So he's now affecting other players.
Especially well, then what you do is you just say, Sergio, why don't you go take a break? Hey, Kelechi, come here. You know.
We've all done that. Don't worry.
When you want to implement a new philosophy, a new style as well of playing, so I think Pep should buy Matt Reed. Pep, go and get Matt Reed. He will press. He will do anything
Not very
you
quickly,
want.
Though.
No, but he will still press, you know, and he can hoof the ball as well.
Moving on, because it was such a special FA Cup week, you get not one, but two debates this week. One's not really a debate. I want to talk about Mark Clattenburg. In some ways, I was surprised that this made such enormous news, because all we really know is that he signed a contract to go and be in charge of referees in Saudi Arabia and to do some officiating as well. I think I'm right in saying Howard Webb did this, and it didn't seem to affect him or be that weird. But I suppose the unusual thing here is that he's walking out on the Premier League, effectively. Anybody else find it odd? I mean, presumably, Saudi Arabia will still be there in a year's time or 2 years' time, right? So that's what struck me as odd. Why is this guy just upping sticks and going?
Maybe he's had enough of... I mean, I thought he got a lot of stick for everything he did, every match. And maybe rightly so, because of the mistake he made, but maybe he had enough of all the criticism for his tattoos, for going and watch Ed Sheeran, for doing this, for doing
that.
But maybe he got so much stick at somebody, he thought, I've had enough. I'm going to go and get... The money was obviously very interesting.
I'm going to go to a place with no alcohol. Me, who's from Newcastle.
You know, I don't know. Maybe that's the reason.
Perhaps it was now or never. Perhaps that's the offer was, you come now and we're going to pay you all this money to do it, or it's not going to be there. We want to get you while you're at the top. And he feels though he's at the top at the moment.
Okay, but you know that's not true. So, you know, you just said that, but it's not true. I mean, reportedly he's going to get £500,000 tax-free. Mm-hmm. He's on 140 grand right now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a tax man's going to go and take, you know, nearly half of that. So... we're talking about a pretty big raise, you know, at the very top of the game. Referees obviously make a lot less than you millionaire footballers. The relationship with Riley wasn't good, but, I mean, he was still in the top two or three referees in the Premier League, and he was on the list, as Howard Webb pointed out in the piece he did last week, he was on the list for the Confederations Cup and for the World Cup. He's never refereed in World Cup. I mean, this is one of the issues with referees, is they're put forward by their national FAs and the Referees Association, and then UEFA selects the ones that they want, and then they go on the FIFA list. So if he joins the Saudis, it's not like they can suddenly get him to leapfrog all the Asian referees and pretend he's a Saudi referee. It just doesn't work. I am interested in this idea of referees moving countries, because this is a point that I've made a long time ago, and Brexit hasn't happened yet. So for the time being, at least... the European Union is a common market. Mm. And if you are a doctor, if you're a plumber, if you're an electrician, if you're a go-go dancer from Hungary, let's say, you can move to England or to Germany or to France and you can practice your profession. There is one profession, maybe there's more than one, maybe there's like Secret Service spy or something, but one obvious profession in sport where you cannot do that is if you're a referee. And I find it grotesque that the Premier League, La Liga, the biggest leagues in the world, they'll take foreign players, foreign owners, foreign coaches, foreign media, look at myself and Julien, but they won't take foreign referees. It's purely protectionism. And
the language is an issue, though. You have to say the language is an issue. Not many French referees speak English. You can't come and referee United against City and not speak English. It's not...
It doesn't seem... First of
it's
all...
It's not possible.
I, unlike you, I haven't polled all French referees, but I do know that pretty much every referee on the FIFA list, and you're talking, if you're on the FIFA list, you're a quality referee, speaks English. So that's what they talk about in FIFA competitions. What?
We have one.
No, I'm sure you have more than one.
Because you think at the World Cups, not all the referees are going to speak the language of the two teams.
No,
true, but...
They generally all speak English. Yeah. They speak refereeing English, basically.
But it's different cultures, isn't there? Different leagues have different cultures, different...
They referee differently.
The only thing that bugged me, which I find grossly unfair, is that if you're, say, Victor Kasai, who's from Hungary, who's a top referee, referees in Hungary are not professional. You are basically, despite the fact that he's an EU citizen, I know we can make our Brexit jokes, but it hasn't happened yet, you're not allowed to earn your living in your profession in another part of the European Union. I find that grotesque. Years ago, there was a referee named Alan Hammer from Luxembourg, and he's the one guy who was able to do this regularly. He got sort of some dispensation where he got to go and officiate in Belgium and stuff like that. But the reason this doesn't happen is because referees' associations are so proud of what they do, and they say, no, our guys are the best. And so, and it's protectionism, basically. And if you're a referee who's worked 10, 15 years to try to get up to the championship, you'll get the Premier League, and then all of a sudden some schlub from Slovenia comes in, then you're going to be annoyed. But, you know, we've been through all this with the players. So if you're listening, Mike Riley, the head of the PGMOL, maybe you'd like to come on and address this with us.
I'm trying to think of the relevance of foreign referees coming into this game.
Come on.
What? Are you saying no better referees than English referees in the rest of Europe?
But why? Would it make a massive difference?
Yeah.
I see a lot of problems with the game.
It's for all the penalties United are getting.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yeah, Victor Kasai wouldn't give you all those pens.
That is problem 935 on a list of 1,000.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
All right, moving on. Gianni Infantino came out last week talking about the 2026 World Cup and stressed bidding hasn't begun yet. And he talked about how in the future we could maybe see 2, 3, even 4 countries co-hosting. Now, we've had co-hosts in the past, obviously, Korea, Japan in 2002. Then Sepp Blatter said, no, I don't like this co-hosting business. Personally, I'm all for co-hosts. It allows many more countries to be involved in World Cups, because otherwise, given the size of the World Cup, especially if it goes to 48, but even at 32, there's maybe 20 countries in the world who could realistically host it without going in.
I think it's going to lose its identity a little bit. So you look at the World Cups, Italia 90s, some of the great, great World Cups. The host nation virtually makes the World Cup for me. Italia 90, Mexico 86, Spain 82. You also got to think about how can you follow your country if it's scattered everywhere. How can you do that?
Well, presumably it's not like... You presumably would be neighboring countries. Yeah, you're not going to have like the US, Papua New Guinea, and Lesotho, you know. But I realize, look, I said with everything, obviously there's going to be...
It's a money thing, isn't
there's it? There's going to be pros and... Well,
It's all about money.
But if I can say, I mean, there's pros and cons. You're talking about money, the fact that you're saving taxpayer money and you're not building a bunch of stadiums and infrastructure you're not going to use, I think is a good thing. The fact that you have more countries, especially little ones, who would never get a chance to host a World Cup or to even be a part of a World Cup, I think is a good thing. I think back to South Africa, right? This is what really struck me. So they built a bunch of stadiums that are still there and at great expense. South Africa is a wealthy country by some standards, but certainly not overall. a lot of these stadiums are there. They're not really being used. I was stuck in Durban. They have this amazing stadium, and there's like this amazing rugby stadium next door, for example. You know, what if they put a game in Namibia? They put a game in Mozambique, maybe Swaziland. You know, it doesn't mean you have to let these people in. It's like, oh, look, you automatically qualify as host. No, you get a couple games, right? I mean, every country needs to have at least one national stadium that would be up for it. You share the cost. You wouldn't be building these other things, and you would make it. You know, Swaziland are never going to qualify for a World Cup.
You're selling it well.
I just think it's common sense. The one complaint, because I had this on Twitter, and I'm going to come right out and say I don't like you people. Is, oh, typical FIFA, no regard for the traveling fan. Now it's going to be harder to travel, okay? First of all, how many people do we know who go and decide to go and, like, when the World Cup rolls around, they go there and they just travel there for a month?
Lots of people do that.
Okay. You must know a lot of wealthy people or people who are criminals or don't have jobs. Who the hell gets 1 month off work to go and move to another country on the other side of the world?
People do it. They'll plan it for 2 or 3 years. They'll save every penny they've got, and they will go to whatever. And I can, I'll introduce you to people on Twitter.
Please do.
And if you follow England, you get a cap for every game. So if you get so many caps, and you get guaranteed tickets, so it's a very, very naive statement to come out with.
No, it's not naive. I know.
There are lots of people with
the Republic of Ireland at Euro 2012. But what I'm saying is there are lots of people. What are they? Are they in the thousands? Are they in the tens of thousands?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got tens of thousands of people there versus hundreds of millions of people who are effectively shut out of being part of a World Cup because their country is too small. And in addition to that, you've got hundreds of millions of people who could care less about football but have to go and pay the bill for this crazy infrastructure project because somebody's decided that, oh, no, well, you have to build 10 stadiums and it all has to be inside one country.
I think it's okay if you've got each group play in that country. So they're not traveling all around the two or three countries. If your group A, plays within a certain area. That's fine for people traveling, isn't it?
And that's what they generally do. Yeah. They didn't do it in Brazil so much, but that's what they've done in the past is you'll have a group and it'll generally only play in two cities or three cities max.
And in fact, if you look at the Euros in France, for English fans to go from Marseille to Lille, which is literally the most south
end of the country.
Yeah, it would be quicker to go from, I don't know, Belgium to Luxembourg. Let's take those two than to go from Lille to Marseille in the same country as well. So probably cheaper.
I mean, it depends on what he's not having it.
Why experiment? What's the saying? If it's not broken, why fix it?
Well, a lot of people would say that given the enormous losses and the enormous spending
incurred, if you're going to lose money, why bid for the World Cup?
You can't always have the World Cup in the States or in France.
Listen, if you want to go there, and this applies to the Olympics as well, right? Just accept it. For me, the greatest, and it struggles, it's hard for me to say this because they're Germans, but for me, the greatest World Cup in terms of logistics, in terms of experience and stadiums and so on, I also like the winner, of course, was 2006, okay? Let's just have every World Cup in Germany. It's easy to get to.
You're a journalist that gets shipped around, you get free passes, you stay in the best hotels. You can't say, oh, this is a fan experience.
I think if you were to poll fans, most fans would say that Germany, from that perspective, was tremendous because it was safe, there were trains everywhere.
And people
the stadiums
say France was fantastic, France Italia 90 was brilliant, all these. Why go and play it in the middle of no man's land and think, oh, right, that's great, you've got the World Cup today?
Football is for everybody.
So what's the middle of no man's land?
Well, countries that haven't got a football in, history.
Right, like Scotland. Because I want to ask you, Scotland haven't got a football history. Well, but that's what you're talking about, because we're talking about
two of the biggest clubs in the world, arguably.
Yeah, exactly. But that's precisely my point, Scully. I'm saying is Scotland will never host a World Cup unless it's via joint bid, right? Do you really think they're going to cram 10 stadiums into this little wee nation of 6 million people? And yeah, you look at Scotland's contribution to football history, and it's probably second to none in terms of the beginnings of the game, right? Why shut Scotland out? Why shut Wales out? I mean, I'm mentioning countries you're more familiar with. Belgium or Holland couldn't. If you just limit yourself to Europe, who could host a World Cup in Europe? Right. England, Italy, Spain, Germany, France, Russia. Maybe Turkey. But even Turkey's a stretch.
That would be a struggle for Turkey.
Right? So
Portugal might struggle.
Portugal. How could Portugal possibly do it? They had 8 stadiums in 2004, and then half of them are still empty. Right? Yeah, seriously. Go around the world. World Cups
every 4 years. You've just named 10, so that's 40 years.
You can't always have it in Europe.
You can't always have it in Europe in the same countries.
I'm just saying, Europe's one. Argentina, Brazil. Let's name them. There's a super.
Okay, Argentina, Brazil. Okay, you've named the two. Okay, now we can move on from South America. You can mention the U.S. and you can mention Mexico.
And Australia.
Okay? That's it. You mention Australia. You can mention China. You can mention Japan maybe, at a stretch. Yeah.
Well, how many more do you want to mention? So that's two.
So just shut out everybody else in the world. Welcome to Scobie's world.
Give me four countries that you think, if we do it in these four countries, it will work.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example from 2026. And admittedly, these are very, I mean, the distances are big because these are big countries.
Right.
But a Mexico, U.S., Canada bid. If you had, say, Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal from Canada, you could have Guadalajara, Mexico City, and some other place. And then you have six U.S. cities in between. And you did it, as Julian said, you did it so that the group stage would be in one country. And not just one country, but in one area of the country, right? I don't see what the problem would be.
And then the last 8, you know, last 16, and then quarterfinals.
That's where the traveling would become more difficult once you get past the group stage. But most people, I think, when they book their World Cup, they book it for the group stages, not for going on to the next stages.
If you want a really good World Cup, what makes a really good World Cup is a passionate host nation,
right?
Which you wouldn't have in the US.
In Scotland.
Well, the US is a footballing nation.
Their women's team is like double Olympic champion,
world champion. 100,000 people.
Of course they are.
You really want to go there? You really want to go there?
Don't go there with him either.
Do I have to bring up France? If you talk about passionate footballing nation, do you think France?
I think France is a footballing nation.
You really think so?
Yeah, it does.
Can you help me out on this?
We are, but we're not passionate. As opposed to Liga, there's more supporters at MLS than there is at Liga.
Go to a Timbers match and.
I go and watch football in France, and I'm telling you now, if you go and watch football in League One, you'll see the most atmospheric stadiums in European football at this moment in time.
Well, only at Saint-Etienne, PSG.
He goes to Monaco. This is the part of the stadium. You go visit your mate in Monaco.
I went to watch Rennes versus PSG 3 weeks ago in Rennes in a cup game. 22,000 fans there. There was a lot of PSG fans that come down back. The atmosphere was far better than you see in a Premier League ground.
Better than Old Trafford?
Yeah.
Well, because all the Norwegians are there.
So you talk about French football. So Saint-Etienne came to Old Trafford last week. And he asked Manchester United fans, it's the best away support they have seen in a long, long, long time. Okay.
That's great. But what I'm saying, it goes back to the
debate of French football isn't passionate. It's false.
The idea, I get really uncomfortable when people start saying, well, but they're not a footballing nation. To rule out certain countries from hosting the World Cup. That makes me extremely uncomfortable because, like I said...
Why?
Well, again, I will cite France as an example. Not France today, but France 1998. I was in Paris, and as I presume so were you. You wouldn't have known, depending where you hung out, you wouldn't have known that there was a World Cup going on.
Even before the Euros last summer.
You wouldn't.
You didn't have the feeling.
It's not France, obviously, it's a big country. So there is.
You're in the posh seats.
It's the number one sport there, but we are not sports fanatics anyway, whether it's football, basketball.
So the semi final in Marseille, France, Germany wasn't.
No, but take another example. 2006 World Cup final. France are in it. It's in Germany. It's literally next door. It's, you know, there's 2,000 fans, 2,000 French fans there. We don't travel to watch our team. We're not fanatics in that way. I think that's what Gavs means.
And between all the rugby and cycling fans in France, and between the large proportion, I think France is probably
France. Obviously,
I'm not saying it in a negative way, but France probably has a higher percentage of people who are too cool to have any interest in sport whatsoever. It's certainly relative to other European nations. I saw it in Paris in 1998, and I saw it again at the Euros. There were people who just really could not care less about sport in general or about football. It's just a big portion of the population. It's not a majority. Does this mean France shouldn't host a World Cup? I don't think so. Are Korea and Japan, are those footballing nations?
I don't know.
Right. Okay, so
the honest answer.
When in doubt, let's not let them host a World Cup. Australia? Or do you go down the Australians are so good at sport because they beat us at cricket.
The World Cup that's coming up in Qatar, is that the right place to hold the World Cup?
But to be perfectly honest, having been to Qatar last month, I would argue it's a wrong place for many reasons, but the passion and the interest people have in football is not one of them. I mean, it's a tiny country. Those people absolutely, there's a huge amount of people who are into it. They don't necessarily go and love their club football. I went to a game where I actually counted the people in the stands. It was it was Umm Salal against Al Rayyan, I think, with Michael Laudrup managing, and there were maybe 200 people there. But these are the people who sit there and sit in front of their TVs and watch everything football-wise that there is to watch, and they travel to go and watch European games and whatever. I mean, that's the reality of it, you know. You can be a small country and be really passionate into your football.
Question.
And
then bring up Scotland again. To hold the World Cup?
Probably not, but not. In fact, that is a perfect example. When I was there, I spoke to people. That would have been the perfect place for a regional World Cup. Rather than building 10 stadiums in Qatar, you know, share it out. And I think, actually, they would have been open to it. They could have shared it out with Bahrain, with Dubai, with Abu Dhabi, with Saudi. In a perfect world, with Iran. By the way, that's another passionate country where they would have no trouble hosting a World Cup. You know, why not? Didn't happen. Lots of reasons it didn't happen. But personally, I think the principle is a sound one. Okay, enough debating. How about some quick hits? Manchester United turned to the big guns, bringing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who some people thought would come nowhere close to scoring 20 goals in a season, and Paul Pogba off the bench to dispatch Blackburn Rovers. Stuart Rashford started the game, and he scored as well. We had Duncan Castles, who, of course, is very close to Mourinho, telling us that the special one has big plans for Rashford. I can't help but wonder, how do you see his future at Old Trafford?
He's got to improve his game understanding a little bit. I think he's got a big place at Manchester United. I think it's mainly at centre forward. I think he's still got to get his head up when he's running with the ball. But he's played a couple of little 1-2s yesterday. He was clever in and around the box in the first half on a couple of occasions. I think he's got a massive future. He's just got to learn to find that final pass or final shot.
We're going to have a rare follow-up question here because United are massive and they're the most famous team in the world, as I've been told since I was a kid. You said his future's at centre forward. Zlatan's going to be around another year. We hear stories about how United want to sign a big centre forward. Would another year or two of him off the bench, would that be damaging? I get Stuart and Scully, if you like.
I'm not sure it'd be damaging. As long as Manchester United are playing in enough competitions and he gets enough chances to show what he can do. If he's playing 20 games a year, I think that'd still be part of his development.
Mourinho's not going to suddenly play two strikers,
no.
Right?
If he's only playing 6 or 7 games a year, that's going to hamper his development.
How many appearances has he made in just over a year for Manchester United?
How many?
Rashford, 50.
You're not concerned that somebody else coming in or whatever?
I think the pathway for him will be exceptionally hard. I think somehow he's got to probably become a little bit more consistent. I think if you're a young centre forward, you've got to go and learn your trade out wide, score goals, and then maybe get a little bit more responsibility down the middle, which Henri did in his career, if you look at that pathway.
If Rashford were Italian or Spanish or maybe even German instead of Mancunian in that situation, they would say, let's loan you somewhere for a year at a club that we trust. Let's get you starting in the Premier League at centre forward, and then let's evaluate you, you know, in a year's time. But I suppose the mentality here is that that wouldn't happen with a guy in that situation.
I think a lot of clubs loan out their youngsters now, and that's
but
that's
not
the model.
But not youngsters of Rashford's magnitude.
No, because he's in and around the first team.
Well, not youngsters that are in the England squad and played for England.
Exactly.
But at the moment, he's ahead of Martial, that's for sure.
But Martial's a better player.
Now, in contrast to other Premier League sides facing lower league opposition, Tottenham fielded a very strong 11, I thought, for the visit to Fulham, and they won 3-0, with the man they call Harry Kane bagging a hat-trick. Julian, they have to come back from a loss to Ghent in the Europa League. Was this an unnecessary risk from the Poch, or is it merely a hedge in case they get knocked out from the Europa League?
I think he made the right choice. I think they needed a strong performance because they've been poor, especially in the Europa League in the first leg on Thursday. And even before that, I think it was very good for the confidence overall. I think it was good for Kane to score a hat-trick, and I think they will turn it around on Thursday.
More misery for your old club, Scoey, as Leicester fall to Millwall at the Den. I was struck by the fact that Millwall's Steve Morrison said that Leicester's young left-back, Ben Chilwell, was scared to take throw-ins. In fact, I was really shocked when I read this. It's in the Times, and I think it's is it Gary Jacobs' piece?
He's quoted, I've got it in front of me here. I presume it is true because I'm not sure why he would say it. He says, the left back, he started taking throw-ins and after a couple of bits of verbal, he didn't want to take a throw-in, said Morrison. I'm not being funny. He said his fingers hurt him. Come on, we're playing football. He didn't want to take a throw-in after that. He asked the centre-half to take the throw-ins in the first half. And that is staggering.
Are you buying this?
I can't believe for 1 minute a lad would say, my fingers hurt, come and take a throw-in. But Steve Morrison said it. He would have been there.
Do you know this Steve Morrison? Any of you guys know him?
Yeah, he's been around for years.
He misspells his last name, by the way. Yeah. It's two R's in Morrison. But anyway.
Played for Bishop Stortford.
But it's a nasty thing to say about, even if it was true, right? Would you ever say something like that?
No, I wouldn't say something like that.
It's a really mean thing to say about a 20.
What I would say is I've seen him in the FA Cup Millwall. I saw them play Bournemouth, and Bournemouth, the players, although that they made, Eddie Howe made 10 changes, could not handle the pace and intensity that Millwall played at. Watford was exactly the same, and Leicester got it wasn't a surprise to me.
You also said that this is the most intimidating stadium, one of the most you've been. No, you've played at
Millwall. Millwall is by far the most intimidating. I don't think there's really many intimidating.
But because you know they're all going to come on the pitch at the end. This is the other thing I don't get. Like, people are like, oh, the policing. Right? Two things struck me about this, right? So I didn't watch the game, obviously, because it was on television, but I watched the Twitter feed, and people are tweeting pictures of guys running onto the pitch, and it is Millwall after all, right? And then I watch Match of the Day, and there's no mention of this. There's very little mention of this anywhere. I mean, it seems like it just all gets written out. And I'm thinking to myself, like, it's Millwall. Like, you can't.
Vichy, I don't really see that as the big, the talking point. It's another.
I don't have a problem with the pitch invasion. I have an issue when the pitch invasion results in fighting with police and with away fans.
Because if you come on to celebrate with your team, you celebrate. You don't then go up to the other end where the away supporters are and taunt them and cause all the problems that you cause.
Especially the other thing too. You're Millwall, right? It's not like Leicester are your mortal sworn enemies. It's not like you're playing West Ham or something, right?
You've beat a Premier League team in the last minute. You're down to 10 men. Give them some credit.
Celebrate on the pitch, but don't go after the cops and the away fans.
I think they went up to the away fan, goaded them a little bit.
But I have to say, all I can go by is what is on Twitter, because of course no pictures of this. The powers that be, the rights holders, chose not to show it, maybe because it's bad for business. Middlesbrough had a roller coaster tie against Oxford and nearly served up another upset. Borough went 2-0 up, then Oxford roared back to 2-2 before Christian Stuani's late, late, late goal. Stuart, the FA Cup is great and all, but Borough haven't actually won a game in the Premier League in 2 months. How does Aitor Karanka turn cup performances into league points?
I'm not sure he'd want to turn that performance into league points, because if you're playing a top side and you win in the last minute, that would build confidence. I'm not sure this game would build too much confidence for Middlesbrough and the manager, because they were 2-0 up, Oxford got back to 2 and they score in the last minute. So I don't think they'd be too confident going into the next game. I don't think it was a great performance or a great result. The result is okay, but the performance and how they got to that result wasn't good enough.
You reckon they're going down?
Every possibility.
So let's talk Monaco ahead of the City game. Julian, there's a great piece by Ollie Kay, who went out to the Principality in the game today and hung out with Mr. Vadim Vasilia.
Stayed at your apartment in Monaco?
Have you been to this? I don't have an apartment in Monaco. It's a couple towns over. Mr. Vadim Vasilia, by the way, I believe he's the former Russian ambassador to Iceland. Did you know that?
Yeah. He's a very, very clever guy.
I love the part when he talks about whether they sold Martial in the story.
Yeah.
This great actor is like,
come back next year.
Yeah, exactly. While it was fascinating to read all these thoughts, I'm more interested in what you have to say, since presumably you know more about Monaco.
22nd? Oh, it's just for this time we have a bit more, maybe?
Yes, you can have 30.
Yes. I think it's a fascinating game. For me, it's the two best attacking team in Europe right now. We know that City going forward could be incredible. Monaco have been fantastic. 108 goals in all competitions scored this season already. For me, it's 50-50, and simply because Monaco have a better balance defensively than City have in terms of attacking and defending. City, I still think, are quite poor defensively. Monaco are really solid. Kamil Glik, who they signed from Torino in the summer, has been superb for them at the back. Jameson is suspended, which is a bit of an issue. Please, just have a look at all those incredible youngsters they have. Mbappe will be on the bench, but Bakayoko, Sidibe, Mendy, Lemar, of course, Bernardo Silva as well. All those youngsters at Monaco who, could end up at City next season, or at United, or at Chelsea, or Arsenal, or anywhere in the Premier League, but they're really worth having a look at.
Chelsea rolled over Wolves 2-0 and remain on track for the double, though they'll have to get past Manchester United to do it. Scully, Tony Cascarino praised Antonio Conte for taking the FA Cup seriously. He made 6 changes and he played Pedro at wing-back. Does that sound serious to you?
Well, he's picked a team good enough to beat Wolves, hasn't he? Which was achieved, really. I think if you look at Chelsea's point of view, most clubs would. They've virtually got one hand on the title. What else? They might as well do well in the cup as well, win the double. So why wouldn't you take it seriously?
But then you wouldn't be making 6 changes, would you?
No.
Gab, one for you. A wonderful and insightful column today once again. This time on Luis Enrique, Barcelona's embattled manager. But do you really think he's a scapegoat?
Kind of. There's an incredible stat I found which I put in the column where the most frequently used midfield trio for Barcelona has actually started 6 times this season, which is just as extraordinary. So you can complain to him about the lack of chemistry. You can complain to him about the rotation. You can complain to him for changing the style and trying to get the ball forward to the front three as quickly as possible. Maybe he's made some mistakes, but by the same token, there's an absolute power vacuum at the club above him. There are certain players who really are not pulling their weight this season in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. I think it's very much a case of shared responsibility. And what bugs me is the way he's been treated like some kind of a village idiot when, I believe since he's been there, he won the treble in his first year. He won the double in his second year. And by the way, you can say, oh, but it's Barcelona. Yeah, he had to rebuild from the absolute dross and turdery of the Tata Martino year. You know, let's not forget that, right? People have this idea like, oh, but it's easy, it's Barcelona, everybody's riding on Pep's coattails. Well, you went from Pep, who built what he built, to Tito, who's obviously with Pep, and then Tito Villanova, of course, you know, had to leave. Tata Martino took over, and it nearly got derailed. Now he's bounced back from that in the most emphatic way. They are playing differently. Frankly, if you have Neymar, Messi, and Luis Suarez up front, I don't really blame you for trying to get the ball forward to those guys quickly and bypassing the midfield. You know, he's certainly made mistakes. I don't want to see this Andre Gomes thing. I just don't get playing Arda Turan in midfield. I don't get, but yeah, I think he's been in a tough time. And interestingly, we're only mentioning Arsene Wenger at the end of the show. Like Arsene Wenger, he has a contract renewal offer sitting on his desk, and he's saying, "I'm not going to sign it until I'm ready to sign it, until I've decided."
Do you think he'll be there next season?
I don't know, but I just want to say Roma fans have this famous banner for him after he didn't do well. He finished 7th in the league. He resigned, and they called him Luis Enrique, a real man in a world of phonies. And I have to say this, he really is a real person. Any other manager out there, I'm not going to name names, but you know who you are, would say like, well, let me go and sign this extension, first of all, because it's going to give me more legitimacy and power, and it's a vote of confidence in the club. And when they do sack me, I'll get $6 million in compensation, right? He hasn't done that. That guy has got stones.
And when you saw him at Roma, I saw him play very often. You could see what style he was trying to introduce to the team. It wasn't like he wasn't just go there and coach and say, oh, well, let the players get on with it. I'll let the players make the decisions. He had a specific way of playing. It didn't work for him for whatever reason. Mm. But you could see that he was doing something different to every other team in Italy at the time. The way he was getting De Rossi to be the sweeper and then go in front of them. They were trying to play out from them, but they were making the pitch big. It was something he was trying to do. And he's changed since he's been at Barcelona. Yeah. And the problem against PSG wasn't when they tried to get the ball forward quickly. It's when they tried to play out from the back. Yeah. That's when they had the problem.
I mean, he's a guy who obviously makes mistakes like everybody, but I think he learns from them. And I think there's also something to be said for character and humility. I think what hurts him is that he's not exactly a cuddly guy. And, you know, he's a little bit introverted, keeps himself and whatever else. Many, many thanks to my guest today, James Scowcroft, traveling all the way in from Bury St. Edmunds in the far, far corner of the country. Stuart Robson, traveling all the way in from a little village near Stansted, who Stuart assumed I'd heard of, but...
You've never heard of Stebbin?
And Julian Lawrence, traveling to us from Hendon?
Enfield.
Oh, isn't that near Hendon?
Not far, but not so close.
I'm sorry,
either.
If you're north of the North Circular, you're kind of all the same to me. Yeah. You know,
And yourself, traveling in from Belgravia, is it?
Oh.
Or Monaco. Do you fly in from Monaco?
Helicopter from Monaco.
I live in Earl's Court, which I think, as you'll find, is nowhere near Belgravia. Now, you can subscribe to The Times Online. If it's just £12 for a 12-week trial, you get this pretty nifty app. I don't use the iPad app. I'd say the iPhone app is actually pretty cool. It kind of refreshes three times a day as more stuff comes in. It's actually pretty user-friendly and easy to search. Now, you can also press that subscribe button on wherever you choose to download your podcast, and you can leave us a review on iTunes. Now, obviously, we've cracked the iTunes program, so it only allows for good reviews, but I'm sure that won't be a problem. And of course, that's if you're listening on an Apple device. If you're using Android or whatever else, I'm sure there's some other place where you can download us from. We're going to be back next week. Till then, take care. Bye-bye.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.